into First Things First. I'm Heidi Watney. We've got Chris Broussard and Doug Gottlieb here. All excited to be here again on this hump day.
Totally excited. Been a great week.
We're midweek here. It's not Friday.
You're not still excited?
I'm still excited, but you're like, it's been a great week.
It has.
It's like he's about to do the Russell Simmons, thank you and good night, right?
We are having fun here this week, but we have a lot to get to today. We're going to start with Drew Brees. The Saints' 41-year-old quarterback had some decisions to make this offseason. Test the open market as a free agent, return to the Saints for his 20th season in the league, or just fade away into retirement as the NFL's career passing leader. And where better to make those decisions than Hawaii? I agree. Brees posted while on vacation, my feelings about the 2020 season. I look forward to the grind and the journey for the reward at the end will be worth it. Love you. Hashtag WhoDatNation. Let's make another run at it. So Doug, Brees got enough left in the tank. What do you think?
I feel like Chris and I are both basketball players from college, right? And we still play pickup basketball. And if you've ever had this experience, stick with me for a second. You tell everybody, okay, we're going to meet 7 o'clock. We're going to play early Saturday morning, right? You get there, you get the cobwebs out, you start playing, good run. You get to the last game, and you lose the last game, like, man. And everybody talks about what they're doing. You take off your shoes, and there's 9 guys left on the court. Right, 9 guys left, and everybody else walks out of the gym. Like, yo, man, you want to play one more? You want to run that back? And you already have your shoes off. You already texted your wife. You're coming home, right? You're already thinking about your day. And then it kind of doesn't sit with you well that you didn't win your last game. You're like, all right, we'll just go straight to 11, just one more, right? You put your shoes back on. And what happens in the last game? The level of basketball is never the same. Somebody usually gets hurt, right? Running that back is always a bad idea. When it's time to go, it's time to go.
And but you and I are really old guys.
But the point is, so is Drew Brees from a football sense. And you look at how he faded 2 seasons ago. Right. You look at even this year with kind of load management because of the injury, Teddy Bridgewater, you get past his 12th game plus, and all of a sudden, his arm just didn't have the same zip in it. And he's playing in a dome. He's still playing with a great coach. He's still playing with the best wide receiver in football. And it's not the same because of the wear and tear and the attrition. And I understand. I love Drew Brees. He's going to be great if he wants to coach, if he wants to be a dad, if he wants to be a broadcaster. He's an all-time great quarterback. But I do think that once you really start thinking hard about retirement, you see the fade, and you understand, look, maybe they got screwed 2 years ago against the Rams. And I don't think it was a bad no-call against Kyle Rudolph this year, but it doesn't sit well with them. And then, of course, you go back to the Minnesota Miracle. All the last 3 years have been horrible in terms of ways to end tremendous seasons. But when you're done, you're done. When your shoes are off and you've texted your wife that you're coming home, don't run it back. I feel like it's a mistake. I think he should have rode off into the sunset as the all-time career passing and touchdown leader.
I couldn't disagree more. I get your analogy about the open run, but Drew Brees has a lot left. He does. Now, I get it. The last 2 years, he dropped off after game 11. So games 12 and on, certainly last year, you know, 2 years ago, you saw for the last several games he didn't play well. This year was just one game. It was the playoff game, but he wasn't the same in that game. But that's not enough of a sample size for me to say he can no longer get it done. When I look at his body of work for the entire season. Now, again, if your 12-game theory is true, then, yeah, he's going to fall off at that point and he won't be the same. We'll find out this year, but I just haven't seen enough to believe that because, Doug, you know the numbers. I mean, Drew Brees had a phenomenal year. Again, 74% completion, which was led the NFL. 271 yards a game, 27 touchdowns, 4 interceptions. He was like 9th in yards per attempt. So it wasn't, I know he doesn't throw the long ball like he used to, but he's made up for it. He's very efficient. He's still, you know, like I said, 8 yards per attempt, which isn't bad. So I still think he's got plenty left. He faced the best defense in the league, we would say, San Francisco, and threw for 5 touchdowns, no picks, 350 yards against them. Aaron Rodgers could do nothing against that defense. So I think he's got plenty left. Obviously, the way they've lost some of these games in the playoffs definitely grates at him. I think he's not the issue. The defense is fine. Drew Brees is fine. Obviously, their receiving corps with Michael Thomas is fine. The running game is what they need. It hasn't been the same without Mark Ingram. Alvin Kamara can't be that back who's carrying the ball a lot. Obviously, he's a great receiver.
Right.
But if they can get the running game straight, even if they don't, because last year they were pretty much as good as anybody in the NFC, I think they're still a Super Bowl contender. I absolutely think he made the right decision.
Well, look, and we can't make decisions for other people. I do understand that. For a quarterback specifically, it's the last time in your life you're going to have 45 eyes on you, 10 eyes on you every time you're in the huddle, 80,000 people cheering right. for you, right? Like, I understand that he wants to end it, in his mind, the right way. And I do think there is precedent for, even if his arm is rubber and he can't throw the football. And Peyton Manning was bad his last year, right?
Yeah, you point out nine touchdowns. I don't think you expect him to be that bad.
No, right? No. And playing in the dome, playing with Sean Payton. And let's also be honest, that division leaves a lot to be desired. We think Tampa's close, but we don't know who their quarterback is. You know, Atlanta made a late season push, but they were a below 500 team that had to change their coaches from offensive coaches to defense coaches, vice versa. And Carolina's hit and reboot, right? So you feel like there's at least four wins in that division for a team that of late has dominated that division. And if the defense can carry you, if the skill position players can carry you. The other issue I have is there are some things to fix with the Saints. The NFC is loaded outside of their division, right. And they're kind of top heavy with their salaries, right? I mean, if you look at it, what they paid Michael Thomas, what they're paying Drew Brees, they're 27th in salary cap space as of right now. So there's not a ton to move around to kind of fix some of those holes that they have. They have drafted pretty well over the past couple of years. I just get the general sense, though, that when you're thinking about retiring, I remember Brett Favre. Right, Brett Favre, they lose to the Saints. He throws the ball across his body. They lose in overtime, the NFC Championship game. He goes home and he retires in Mississippi. And then Brad Childress, Chile, sends a couple guys down in a plane. They bring him back. And you're like, all right, let's run it back. What happened? Brett Favre's starting streak ends because he gets hurt. The dome, the Metrodome literally collapsed. Like, it was symbolic for the Minnesota Vikings. And when you try and get one more run out, a lot of times it doesn't work out the way it worked out for Elway with the championship, the way it worked out for Peyton Manning with the championship. Those are the exceptions. The norm is one season too long doesn't work out.
And I think you would understand that it is hard to go. A few people have done it. Barry Sanders, Jim Brown. But to walk away when you still feel like you're at the top.
Question.
And he has every reason to still think he's at the top. I agree with you. He's not what he was a few years ago.
I don't know if he thinks that, though. I think he thinks
he's close enough.
I think he thinks he's close enough. But if you thought that he was still at the top, I don't think there would have been this amount of consternation over if I want to still do it or not.
Well, yeah, I'm generally with you on when guys are thinking about retirement. I brought this up with Tyson Fury and Deontay Wilder coming up. Fury's talking about maybe I'll retire after this fight. I don't like that. But in the case of Brees, he's a sensible guy. I'm sure he's thought long and hard through this. And I don't think it's just because of the way they lost in these last few playoffs. I think it's also he's having fun. And here's the thing about these guys, Doug. You know this. They're still young. We look at them as old, and they are in football years. But he's looking at it like, I've got the rest of my life. I got the next 50 years to do whatever it is I want to do next. I am going to maximize this time that I can have as an athlete. And when he looks at his numbers, when he looks at his productions, he's saying, there's every reason for me to come back.
Do you think there's any amount of selfishness over, I have my records, and I want to continue to have, Brady's going to keep playing, I need to keep playing to protect my records and my legacy?
Look, we like to talk about athletes shouldn't, you know, it should all be about winning and not about individual records. We both played. You want records,
yes.
Right? I'm not mad at LeBron James for wanting to pass Kareem, wanting to be top five assists. So I have no problem if Drew Brees feels that way. But I also think he's smart enough to look down the line and see that the way the game is going, Pat Mahomes and maybe other guys are going to pass him just the way things are.
But I think it's especially important to Brees because it's kind of all he has.
Yep.
Right? Like no one, we all think Drew Brees is great. But he's not, no one believes, at least I don't believe anybody puts him in even the Aaron Rodgers category, let alone the Tom Brady category. And so all he really has right now are those records to say, like, those guys, you may think I'm not as good as those guys, but look at these numbers. I think they're especially important to him. And I do think there's at least a portion of it is protecting that legacy.
Look around you. It's a wireless world, and everyone needs a great pair of wireless earbuds. Before you go dropping hundreds of dollars on a pair, you need to check out the wireless earbuds from Raycon. You already know Raycon earbuds start at about half the price of any other premium wireless earbuds on the market, and that they sound just as amazing as other top audio brands you know. And Raycon's latest model, E25, is their best one yet. With 6 hours of playtime, seamless Bluetooth pairing, more bass, and a more compact design that gives you a nice noise-isolating fit. Raycon's wireless earbuds are so comfortable, perfect for on-the-go listening and for taking phone calls. Unlike some of your other wireless options, Raycon earbuds are both stylish and discreet with no dangling wires or stems. Now's the time to get the latest and greatest from Raycon. Get 15% off your order at buyraycon.com/FTF. That's buyraycon.com/FTF for 15% off Raycon wireless earbuds. Buyraycon.com/FTF.
Moving on to the Astros, the team has received a plethora of backlash stemming from their sign-stealing scandal. It's even crossing sports. LeBron James chiming in, the King tweeting this out. Listen, I know I don't play baseball, but I am in sports, and I know if someone cheated me out of winning the title and I found out about it, I would be expletive irate. I mean, like, uncontrollable about what I would, could do. Listen here, baseball commissioner. Listen to your players speaking today about how disgusted, mad, hurt, broken, etc. they are about this. Literally, the ball is in your court, or should I say field, and you need to fix this for the sake of sports. Wow. Those are big words, Doug. How does baseball move on from this?
I just think they got to let the games begin. That's the problem with it. How do you move on when there's no reason? You're going to have, obviously, spring training games, and you're going to have some balls being thrown at some of these Houston Astros players. You have Nick Markakis saying these guys, I couldn't tell, did he say they need a beaning or a beating? Everybody says it sounded like beating, but it might have been beaning because it wasn't a strong T. It was kind of like a hard-hitting New Britain, right? He didn't really enunciate the right syllable.
Beaning
anyway,
I hope he wasn't
saying beaning, though.
But that's what's going to happen. How do they move on? While I agree with LeBron and I have no problem, like, this idea that he can't comment about baseball when he's a basketball player.
I love it.
Why, right? You're not supposed to be a sports fan?
I hate staying your
lane. Sports is his lane. Right? You'd rather non-professional athletes or other, you know, mooks on TV that have never played a sport to comment, but he can't comment? So I have no problem with commenting. It's just the reality of it. Like, yes, listen to your players. I think that to me is the part that's most astounding about this scandal, is that, and you know because you cover it for the MLB Network, right, is that you go back to steroids, any other controversy, players never speak out about other players, especially in baseball. It's the tightest union there is, and they're in a CBA negotiation right now. And other players, like Mike Trout, had something to say. I'm an Angel fan, okay? Mike Trout has never had anything to say about anything, ever. And Mike Trout's like, you know, if I hit a game-winning home run to win the World Series, I wouldn't, you got no problem you taking off my shirt. Direct shot across the bow to Jose Altuve. And when you have star players, obviously the Dodgers are ticked, that's gonna happen. Obviously Aaron Judge, who feels like his MVP was robbed from, that's gonna happen. But you have guys that have no dog in the fight, no nothing, and they're commenting. That to me signals you have a problem, but I just don't know what Manfred can do. His hands are tied, there's still a month before baseball's played, and then once games are played and guys throw at the Houston Astros, do you suspend those players when you didn't suspend the Astros for participating in this scandal? I think they're in a real, between a rock and a hard place.
I think the reason that, as you said, this is very unusual, especially for baseball. Mm-hmm. And Manfred's whole issue was, I can't, you know, punish the players because I can't go against the union. But yet members of the union, the players, are going against members of the union, the players. So that, and I think it's because the baseball union has always looked out for the interests of all the players.
Right.
Not just the superstars, not just a select few, all of them. And they are looking at this like, You took jobs away from some guys. You took contracts away from some guys.
But wait, so did steroids, though. This is the whole thing. Like,
let's stick with where we're at right now. And so I think that's why the players are so upset, is because guys, you know, lost jobs because of this. Now, I do think there's something he can do. He can't suspend players. They won't beat the union in that regard. And there was a great article in The Athletic yesterday about how even the legalities of it, because the players weren't informed by the league about the repercussions of doing what they did directly. Like, there's no chance you would win in a court of law or anything like that against
even if he had not granted immunity, you're saying. Yeah,
right. That's what the article was saying, and you know, lawyers and things like that. So let's say they can't do anything against the players. To me, and I've been beating this drum since the report came out.
Trash can. Vacate the trash can.
Right. Vacate the title. Vacate the title. In my view, that solves everything. Number one, you're not punishing players, you're punishing the organization. So I don't think the union should have much to do with that. Even if the union does have a say, I think the response of many of the players around the league would say that the union would be like, you know what, go ahead, vacate that title. So that you vacate the title, I think you can work around the union. Number two, it satisfies everyone's thirst for justice. That's why we're so upset, because there's no justice. We've seen people do wrong. Michael Vick did wrong. People were all upset about it, went to jail, paid the price, and now he's out and people like him.
Right.
So we want justice, and there's no justice being served. So it satisfies that thirst. I think a lot of the players around the league would be like, okay, they lost their rings. They lost their trophy, their piece of metal, so to speak. They lost their, you know, no longer champions. They can't walk around and say we're champions. It's not, when you go to baseballreference.com, it's not World Series champion on there. It's erased. And I think, Doug, we know in college sports, the Fab Five, they didn't make the Final Four, right? Reggie Bush didn't win the Heisman. We all remember it. I still consider Reggie Bush a Heisman Trophy winner.
Of course he is.
However, the difference is that the violations that he did, that the Fab Five in Michigan did, they were off the field. They had nothing to do with the actual competition. In this case, this was all about the competition. Your cheating ruined the competition of the game on the field. So I really, if they took away the championship, took away all, and I like if they could take away the money too. It was like $429,000 per player. Right.
You ain't getting the money.
If they, I'd love if they could get the money, just take it out of their checks, you know, their next
check. What are they supposed to do? Go into each of their homes and like physically take the ring
back? No,
all
you do is when they get their next checks, you take that money out of the checks. You can even do it per week, you can do it one fell swoop, however you want to do it, but take the money out of their checks. Maybe they can't do that.
Yeah.
I think you can try.
Can I make three quick points that I thought Rob Manfred addressed pretty well yesterday in his process? He did apologize for the trophy comment, which
that's,
you know,
ridiculous.
It's
can't belittle your own trophy like that.
No, but he said it was in reference. He was trying to make a point,
right?
Kind of making
and I actually think when
joke,
you gotta be, you listen
but,
to
know better than
yeah,
that.
But when you listen to it in totality, I don't think it was as bad in a short sound, but I agree it was a mistake. But like, we like Justin Turner saying take the commissioner's name off the trophy, like listen
yeah,
to the no,
yeah,
he was talking about the symbolism
taken
of it,
out of context,
which I actually agree with you. You take their name off the trophy, but go ahead.
The point I'm making is he said, in reference to the players making all these comments, he said it was your union that said we cannot punish the players. He was getting nowhere in the investigation. They started the investigation. They weren't getting any answers. They wanted clarity. They went to the players union and said, we need cooperation from your players. They came back and said, okay, are you going to punish the players? He said, we can't rule that out. So they went back to them and they said, okay, what if we give immunity to a small list of players for their cooperation? The players union said, no, unless you give immunity to all of the players on the team, we are not cooperating. Our players are not cooperating. So when Aaron Judge and Justin Turner and Nick Markakis speak out about not punishing the players, their own union fought for that. And so Manfred's hands were tied there. The no retaliation thing Manfred has made clear, and they've had meeting, he said, with all the field managers, all the baseball managers, if there's retaliation, there's going to be punishments because you are endangering people's health.
That's going to look even worse.
Well, I get it. It will. It certainly will.
Here's the one more
point. Yeah. Vacating the title.
Yeah.
He said, look, I thought about vacating the title long and hard. It's never been done. There's no precedent in baseball. You could break precedent, yes. But what you think about when the 2017 Astros, you said yesterday, you think in 4 years people are going to forget about it? I don't think people are going to forget about it. Are people going to forget that Barry Bonds took steroids? Nobody's forgetting about
yes,
that.
But nobody,
there is
but nobody,
not an asterisk there is no on asterisk his by, name.
There should
there
be.
Shouldn't,
but
there should
everyone
be.
Assumes
no,
there.
No, no, no,
everyone associates an asterisk.
Erase it.
You don't have to put an asterisk there because everyone's already putting the asterisk
it.
There.
They shouldn't be viewed as champions.
No, just put,
they shouldn't
just
be
put
be
an
champions.
Asterisk by it. I think an asterisk is even better. Because
is it better than vacating the title?
Yes, because the asterisk, then when you look it up or you tell, then it becomes a story. Why is there an asterisk there? Then you kind of, then you tell the story. I think either way, it is a symbolic gesture. I think that's where he missed. The symbolic gesture is much bigger. Hey, we do remember. Nothing we can kind of do. The other mistake I believe he made was he cowered to the union by keeping it, all of this discussion about the fact that the Astros, those players would not disclose anything that went on until they were granted full immunity. That should have been made public right then and there. You could have created public sentiment to support you. Like, hey, listen, I'm Rob Manfred. I want to get to the bottom of this, but the Houston Astros won't play ball and the MLBPA won't allow us to do so unless we grant full immunity. We don't think that's the right thing to do. You didn't leverage the power of the commissioner's office against the Astros. You bowed down to him. And had you done that, or simply, hey, listen, if you don't want to talk, that's fine. We're going to suspend the entire operation for a year. And I guarantee you would have had pressure from the owner, who's an idiot for what he said about it not helping their performance. You would have had the pressure for them to talk. He didn't put the pressure points, and I do understand that the union is powerful and the union supported its players, but I think this thing was mishandled because we were kept in the dark as the investigation until it was done, and the public would have supported him and made those players talk.
Perhaps, but you might be overstating or understating the importance of just clubhouse pressure in baseball, and it's one of those things that what stays inside the clubhouse, you don't talk about
until
it.
Now.
Do you remember when the report first came out? And a lot of people were jumping on Mike Fiers
saying
yes. He shouldn't have talked.
Yes.
A lot of people, including people in the media and players, were saying, it doesn't sit right with me that he talked. Now people are saying, oh, good for him for talking. It's cleaning up the sport, and those players need to be punished.
Baseball
the sentiment
didn't
has
want
changed.
To investigate. That's why they didn't do all the stuff you said. The media broke this. Baseball wouldn't have done this, just like the steroids. Media broke that.
Yeah.
The baseball didn't reveal it.
Tom Brady, the six-time Super Bowl champ, is set to become a free agent for the first time in his career. And whether Brady stays in New England or takes his talents elsewhere, the Pats would rather know sooner than later. A recent report stating that New England wants an answer from Brady before free agency begins. Doug, are the Pats making a mistake in requesting an answer from Brady?
No, it's totally reasonable. We need to know, right? Because if we have Tom Brady, we think we got a chance to win the whole thing. If we don't, we got to think about tearing it all down and rebuilding it. I think that's... You know, how can you know who to trade for? You know, are you going to try and trade for Stephon Diggs? Yep. You're trying to get, you know, fix the tight end position. Because the draft, which comes after free agency in football, the draft doesn't really affect them that much this year. Not just where they're drafting, but the reality. Unless you can get a Nick Bosa, you know, or, you know, maybe a Deebo Samuel, whatever. Like, the idea that that's going to change their future, they need veteran guys. But they can't tinker with that roster until they know who their quarterback is. I think it's a very reasonable request from the Patriots.
I agree with you. And there's also the matter of this. If you don't know and he's not locked up by the time free agency starts March 18th, $13.5 million of dead cap money. So I love the idea you threw out, Stephon Diggs. If you could trade for him, that's great. Or if you hit the free agent market and try to get A.J. Green, Hunter Henry, one or both of those guys, you need to know, though, and have Brady locked in at a certain number. If I'm them, and I know what's the picture that's being painted is that it's totally contentious between the two sides and they're not talking and who knows when they'll talk and so on and so forth. But if I'm the Patriots, I'm sitting down with Tom Brady. I think they're going to work this thing out. We're going through all the plans. This is who we're looking at in free agency or maybe in a trade. Who do you want? I know they don't always bring him in on issues like this, but sit down with him and figure this thing out. If you take this amount of money, we can go get A.J. Green. We can go get Hunter Henry or make these types of offers to those guys. And look, all things being equal, there, if Tom Brady is there, free agents are going to want to play there. Receivers are going to want to play with him, just like Antonio Brown wanted to play with them.
Well, I agree with you. I think there's just got to be some trust for Tom Brady for that organization. And, you know, I understand
that he should just take whatever they, you know, take a solid contract from them.
Well, what is
that? And then like, trust them to go get the right guys without talking about it?
Yeah.
Because they haven't really, for all the pay
cuts. That's not what they do. But that's not what they do.
That's why I don't think you can just totally trust them without talking about it.
Let's not mischaracterize Tom Brady in like that he's been, it's not like he's Michael Jordan playing for $1 million. He hasn't been a pauper. He's made $250 million or $240 million, something playing. And there have been times in which he's, they just cleverly move the money around to make it look like he's not making all that much. And granted, he's not making the 30
market
or the 40 million, but they've paid him guaranteed money times in the past. But like, look, we also act like the Patriots haven't been trying to fix the wide receiver thing, right? Between Josh Gordon and Antonio Brown. Hell, they brought in six guys last offseason, six guys the year before. 2 years ago, they're trying to fix the defense. They did. This front office has addressed problems in the past and fixed it. And as bad as the wide receiving core was last year and the loss of Rob Gronkowski hurt them, still won 12 games and they were down one score and Edelman holds onto a ball or Brady's a little bit better. And they, you know, look, the Titans had to bleed the clock in order to cut down the possessions. Like they weren't that far away.
No.
I do think there's like, look, you know what, if I'm the Patriots, I kind of like, look, you know what you get. Tell us what the number is. Okay, we'll tell you what our number is. If you want to negotiate, we'll negotiate. As far as wide receivers, like, look, we tried to fix in the past. Antonio Brown's a knucklehead. Sorry, every day he was here, there was a new story. Josh Gordon is a knucklehead. We're going to have to try and find a way to do it. But we don't know even who we can get until you tell us what the number is and if we can fit their number in with your number to make the whole thing work. And I totally understand where the Patriots are. And to your point, they don't normally bring the players in.
Right.
And one of the things that Tom Brady supposedly has liked is that he's treated just like anybody else. Well, hey, Tom, you treat everybody like everybody else. Let us know what you're going to do. If you're going to move on, fine. We'll go figure out the next guy.
I don't think he wants to be there without improvement at the skill positions.
Do you think they're going to line up with the same guys? Like this idea, the idea that the Patriots
possibly
would be like, no.
No.
I mean, look.
Is Bill Belichick an idiot?
Let's see. Who? Tell him who you're going after. What's wrong with telling him who you're going after?
You can tell him, but it doesn't mean you're going to get them. Then you become a liar if you don't get it.
No. You don't go out and say, we're definitely getting A.J. Green. You can't promise that.
Right.
And Brady understands it. But show me the effort. Because for all you said, and you're right, this year, last year with Josh Gordon, but in the past, for Brady taking less than market value, they have not typically gone out and gotten better skill position players. Other than Gronkowski and Randy Moss, he's pretty much done it with average, mediocre guys. He can't carry those type of guys anymore. So if they want to have a shot to beat Kansas City and win the championship, they got to improve at the skill position players. I think that's one of his major sticking points. More so than the money and market value, I need help at the receiver position. And I think
they trade for Muhammad Sanu. Okay, that didn't work out. They drafted N'Keal Harry.
Maybe that'll work out in the future.
But we're operating on this idea that they wouldn't try and fix the skill position players. Like they're not
pay money though. They're not the money.
Perhaps the control that he's looking for.
Yeah,
I don't think he wants control, but pay the money to get guys. Sanu's a trade.
If you're gonna pay the money, then that means he's got to take less.
You got to figure that out. I think he will take a little less, or certainly less than market value.
Have you ever had muscle pain? I'm talking stop you in your tracks, I'll never work out again, what am I going to do kind of pain. This is the kind of pain Dr. Jason Wersland was in when he created Theragun, the deep muscle massager that's unlike anything you've ever felt. Theragun isn't a cheap massager that just tickles your muscles. Their handheld percussive device uses a scientifically calibrated combination of speed, depth, and power to release the deepest muscle tension. Whether you want to treat your muscle tension from working out, an injury, or just everyday life, you can use Theragun. Theragun is the preferred muscle recovery device for over 250 professional sports teams and used by hundreds of thousands of satisfied customers around the world to reduce pain, increase range of motion, and soothe aching muscles. Try Theragun risk-free for 30 days or your money back by going to theragun.com/cadence. For a limited time, our listeners listeners get a free charging stand with a purchase, a $79 value. That's Theragun.com/Cadence, Theragun.com/Cadence.
Clippers looking to keep pace with the Lakers in the West. Their latest move might have inched them closer. Guard Reggie Jackson has agreed to a contract buyout with the Pistons and plans to sign with the Clips. So, Chris, what do you make of Reggie's decision to join Kawhi over LeBron and the Lakers?
I don't know how much it was over the Lakers. First of all, he's represented by Aaron Mintz, who's the agent for Paul George. And also, who they're friends, Reggie and Paul, but also was the agent for Julius Randle and right. D'Angelo Russell, who Aaron Mintz did not like the way they were treated in right. L.A. You know he shared that with Reggie. However, Reggie did talk to some people with the Lakers, but they didn't go full bore after him. It wasn't like LeBron and AD called him and recruited him. The Lakers feel, whether we agree or not, they feel good about where they're at and what they have. Not that they certainly wanted Darren Collison. But outside of that, and Marcus Morris, obviously they wanted, they're not just like, we just got to add somebody. Now, for the Clippers, I like Reggie there. I mean, I think he's their fourth guard, Doug. Obviously Patrick Beverley is what he is. Lou Williams is what he is. And Landry Shamet is huge for them with his three-point shooting.
Yes.
So I think Reggie's after all those guys. It's kind of insurance for injuries, which is an issue with them. And we kept him from the Lakers, even if the Lakers weren't like 100% on bringing him in.
I would love to like decipher his points and tell me he's wrong, but he's totally. It's not a Rich Paul thing, right? It's a Pelinka thing. Right. It's a like when you have this is the real world of the NBA. Is Aaron Mintz is like didn't even consider the Lakers didn't go after him. He didn't really consider them. So it's not as it's perceived. Are there players that don't want to play with Team LeBron if they're not represented by Rich Paul? Yes. I don't think that's the case here. And though I think it adds to the talent of the Clippers and 1 through 12 right. looks better than the Lakers, last I checked, you can only play five guys. Okay? And that 12th guy you just brought in, I think Reggie knows what he's getting into. But if you remember why it ended in Oklahoma City was he wanted to run his own right. team. He wanted right. to be the guy. He wants to be an alpha. Now, he took a big payday, right? He can count his money and sit on the bench and just come in and get buckets. But I kind of think this helps the Lakers because any minute he's on the court, that means Pat Beverly's yeah. not on the court. That means Lou Williams or Landry Shamet's not on the court. And I think the Lakers have a greater respect for what those guys can do in the matchup against the Lakers than what Reggie can do because he's not what he was when he first came to the Pistons. And I think the big challenge for Doc, and he's been great about it, but this you got a bunch of junkyard dogs in that locker yep. room. You got everybody wants a shot, which is great in theory, okay? But in practice, you can only play five, only one guy shoots, and it sounds great to say, nah, man, I'll play 5 minutes, I'll just clap, I'll wave the towel until you're the guy clapping and waving the towel, and it's just not fun when you want to be out there. I think this is a big challenge, honestly, for that Clippers bench to keep everybody in line. Patrick Beverley generally does it. He's the alpha, more so than Kawhi, more so than yep. Paul George, and especially now a challenge because it's a guy who could potentially take a couple of his minutes.
No, you're making a great point because talking to some people around the league, that's what they brought up is the minutes and the chemistry. There already have been reports about, and I think they're a little overblown,
yes.
but about issues with the Clippers because, you know, Kawhi's low management. The culture has changed. Last year was all about every single game, every yep. single possession matters. We're getting after it every time for 48 minutes. Now it's about these first few months of the season don't really matter. It's all about May and June. That's a total flip for this franchise. Now you bring in a guy who, as you said, wasn't really happy in Oklahoma City yes. coming off the bench, being behind Westbrook and Durant and those guys. How's he gonna? Because again, I think you agree with me. He's their fourth guard. And then Kawhi and Paul George handle the ball a lot. So I'm not sure where he fits in and when he even comes in. He's a talented player.
Yes.
But does he fit even the way they play?
And I talked to some of the people in Detroit last night. And they're like, look, he's matured a lot. I think he can handle it, especially in the hierarchy of that team. But the point you make, which is a really good one, is, look, there are nights. He's probably going to be a guy that plays a bunch on those back-to-back nights. Right,
right.
Because they're going to try and win more games in the regular season. But some of that. It actually can be a curse when you play well because you go out and play really well and you score 25 when the other guys aren't playing. Then you're sitting over there two nights later like, man, I just showed him I can play, and now I'm sitting here. It's a hard thing mentally when you go from a starter to now all of a sudden I'm trying to show that I still have it at a higher level of basketball, and yet I'm not getting the minutes in the bigger games. It's going to be a challenge for Reggie. It's going to be a challenge for the bench. It does make them overall more talented, but that doesn't always win championships.
We talk about physical fitness a lot, but there's another side to the game that's just as important. I'm talking about mental fitness. Calm, the number one app for sleep and meditation, has now teamed up with LeBron James to help you train your mind. LeBron and Calm know that your mind is like any other muscle in your body, and Calm can help you train your brain so you sleep better, so you have less stress, so you perform at your best. For LeBron James, sleep is an important part of his mental fitness routine. He says, getting good sleep and finding time to rest is one of the most valuable things I can do for my body and mind. And if you head to calm.com/sports40, you'll get 40% off a Calm premium membership. With Calm, you have access to the nature scenes LeBron loves and so much more, like sleep stories and meditations. For a limited time, our listeners can join LeBron in using Calm with a 40% discount to an annual membership at calm.com/sports40. Unlock content to help you focus, ease stress, and sleep better. Get started at calm.com/sports40. That's calm.com/sports40.
Who can't eat? Do you think Breeze has enough left in the tank?
Well, I think Breeze has enough left in the tank for this team to be a serious contender because Sean Payton and Mickey Loomis have put together a really good roster. And I think Drew Breeze is not a guy that's going to elevate the play of everybody around him at this stage in his career, but I think he's a guy that can still take advantage of having really good personnel. Now, as far as the situation and the cost-benefit analysis, it all comes down to how much this contract on a one-year proposition is going to cost the New Orleans Saints. Because if you're talking about Drew Brees at $25 million, I like it a lot more than Drew Brees at $30 million. Because you still have some guys on that roster that you would like to extend and keep around. Andres Pete, Eli Apple, Von Bell. All of those guys are starters. All of those are key contributors. And again, we're talking about making sure that you have a complete football team. So when you look at the last two playoff exits for the New Orleans Saints, they were because of Drew Brees' turnovers. 2 years ago, everybody wants to blame the DPI no-call on Nickell Robey-Coleman, but the Saints got the ball in overtime. And Drew Brees ended up throwing an interception. Now he was under duress, Dante Fowler Jr., we all know that, but that was because of a turnover. This year he had an interception and a sack fumble that ultimately ended up gifting the game to the Minnesota Vikings. So you could argue that Drew Brees was the reason why that team didn't advance past where they got to the last couple of years. So to me, I think it's hard to ignore those signs that Drew Brees, in terms of physical ability, is diminishing a little bit.
I agree with you. I think we're so taken by the numbers. And he's been an all-time great in terms of accumulating those numbers. It is helped by playing with Sean Payton, playing indoors, playing with now Michael Thomas, and all the plethora of talent that he's played with, especially recently. They've done a smart job, maybe unlike the Patriots, of getting an aging quarterback better weapons to make him look better. But Chris, I'm not only with you in terms of putting a substantial portion of the blame. You look at the numbers 2 years ago when he played the whole season. His numbers fade at the end of the year. Last year, he didn't play midseason, so you would think he was rested up. And the numbers weren't great in the postseason. And like, look, the problem with some of these guys is they're robots. And from the time they get there at OTAs to the time you get to the postseason, there's so many reps on those arms, right? And they just programmed, I have to throw a certain number of balls. I have to go through my process of getting ready, that they got a dead arm by the time they get to the playoffs. My question to you is, how much in addition to that do you factor in the mentality of flipping that switch back to playing? When you offer up the possibility of retiring, a lot like, and I know he did it longer, Brett Favre, when he goes back to Mississippi, isn't it hard to like, okay, I'm gonna flip the switch and now I'm gonna play? We've always heard that when athletes, especially football players, contemplate retiring, you are retired. Does that also play into the idea of maybe you shouldn't have come back?
Yeah, that's the old Bill Parcells saying. And I actually look at my own career, and that actually happened to me after my 10th season. I was debating whether or not I wanted to come back. Came back for year 11, happened to be the only season that I ended up on IR.
Get hurt, right?
And so we're looking at Drew Brees and we're saying, okay, this is a situation where he's into his 40s, is he going to be healthy and available the entire year? We saw him miss five games last year because of the thumb, but I mean, players are not known to get healthier as they get older in this league. And when you look at Drew Brees, saying that the Saints are going to be a contender would mean saying that we're going to see something from him that we haven't seen from any other quarterback, which is winning a Super Bowl in your age 42 season. Well, I think that's something of significance. When you go back and you look at from 2017 to now, there are 48 quarterbacks that have 300 attempts. And Drew Brees has the fewest air yards per attempt. He's the only quarterback below 7 air yards per attempt. So that shows you, from a physical standpoint, he's not at a stage in his career where he can challenge every level of the defense. And you have to wonder what type of limitations that puts on your team.
Well, look, I agree with your first point that they still can contend for a Super Bowl with Drew Brees. I think last year they were arguably as good as anybody in the NFC. We saw that game they had with San Francisco, 48-46, and Brees was tremendous. 5 touchdowns, no picks, 349 yards. Now, I agree with you.
It was at home.
It was at home, and it was early. You brought up kind of the 12-game theory, which has been the case over the last 2 years. Last year was one game, one playoff game, so I'd like to see that stretched out, and if he faded, you know, just couldn't play anymore after that. I would not sit here and argue that he's not a little bit diminished. But I still think he's a very good quarterback. I still think he's capable of making that team a contender, as I said. I still think he's their best option over Teddy Bridgewater and Taysom Hill. So I think this is a good move for them. I think what they have to do, the defense is fine. Obviously, Michael Thomas is fine. You mentioned some players they need to bring back. They also need to get a stronger running game. Because Alvin Kamara obviously is not the same without Mark Ingram. He's great catching the ball out of the backfield, which is important for Brees, because like you said, the lack of air yards on his passes. However, they need a running game that is going to get some yards on the ground, not just through the air. So that's my main thing. And I think Drew understands that. And that's why I think he will work with them financially, just like he did with his last contract.
Yeah, well, here's the thing. The running game, I'm not too much worried about it because they do have a really good offensive line. I think that's just a matter of finding a running back that can complement what Alvin Kamara brings to the table, because I think we do see a drop off between Mark Ingram and Latavius Murray and what those two running backs bring to the table. You do need that in between the tackles thumper type of running back, a guy that can be a true hammer for your run game, because you have to compliment Drew Brees at this stage in his career probably more than you had to consider in years past, just because he's not the same player. But again, this is going to come down to the numbers on the contract, what it looks like, and the kind of flexibility that is going to afford Mickey Loomis in terms of trying to retain some of those pieces. But the other part of the game is looking at what this does to the quarterback situations in New Orleans. The guys not named Drew Brees, Teddy Bridgewater, and Taysom Hill. You'd like to be able to have
it. Was their best option?
Well, I think it depends on the number. It just depends on the number.
It's going to be probably around 27 million.
It depends on the numbers, but here's what I will say. I know a lot of organizations like to have a succession plan in place for your quarterback. I mean, we saw with Tom Brady in New England. Bill Belichick wanted to keep Jimmy Garoppolo, but he couldn't because Tom Brady forced his hand. You saw the handoff in Green Bay, Brett Favre, Aaron Rodgers, even back in the day with the 49ers, Joe Montana, Steve Young. Most organizations would like to have that handoff. I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater is in the same caliber or same ilk as those guys, but we saw Teddy Bridgewater is a quarterback that you can win with this roster.
They think that Taysom Hill is their heir apparent. That's been their thing. Like, we think
they don't have enough of a sample size from Taysom Hill.
They think they do.
We don't have enough of a sample size.
I agree with you, but they think they do.
To say that Taysom Hill is the heir apparent.
I understand. I mean, like, look, we all agree. We haven't seen enough. Right. And when we see him now, it's a change of pace. So it's hard to see what he would look like downs 1 through 3 when we see him on fourth down or in short yard situations in the red zone. But one, the style has worked some with Lamar Jackson, obviously. They think their former special teams coach came out and said he's even better thrower than Lamar Jackson.
That's why.
Well, Doug,
if
he was going to be the heir apparent, why didn't he play when Drew Brees was out this past year?
He threw one pass.
Why didn't he play? Why wasn't he the starter over Teddy Bridgewater?
They think they got him. I'm asking a question.
Because if Taysom Hill is the heir apparent, why didn't Taysom Hill take the starter's reps before Teddy Bridgewater when Drew Brees was out last year?
I would think it's because they believe they have to change the entire offense. That's the hard part about it, that they have to change the entire offense to run it like Lamar's offense, and that's and they're going to have to get a backup who's more like Taysom Hill. Otherwise, if Taysom Hill goes down, right. He got hurt in college several times, and that style is one that you can get hurt in. Then you're going to have a backup that's more like Taysom Hill than is like Drew Brees. That would be an educated guess on it. And I would also say that look, we can give Sean Payton he knows a lot about quarterbacks. He's the one who signed Tony Romo as an undrafted. A guy in Dallas. He obviously has established Drew Brees as an all-time great. My thing is, you got hurt. Whether Peyton Manning got hurt or he just wasn't any good, he was injured his last year. Eli Manning tried to run it back and tried to fix it with the Giants. It didn't happen. He already got hurt last year and was only a thumb. I just feel like sometimes losing in the playoffs as much as it hurts is a sign, hey, dude, this is not going to happen again. You should walk out that door with all your faculties as a great father and potentially do television. I kind of feel like he's going to, because he'd be great on TV.
I think he'll be fine.
Look at his contemporaries.
He's been talking about retirement for, 4 years?
Yes, and his arm almost fell off last year.
But he was fine for before last year.
No, he was bad.
He was throwing the ball to the other team.
He's been talking about retirement for years.
I understand. Look at all his contemporaries. Right, Eli's done. Okay, Ben Roethlisberger just had his arm almost fell off. He had Tommy John surgery. That never happens to football players, right? And Philip Rivers.
We can say this thing about just, Brady's contemporaries.
Yes, and Brady has fallen off as less maybe than most people his age.
But not to but the he's point not where Tom he doesn't Brady. Need to be playing. And I think it's the same with Brees. As you said, he's dropped off a little, but to the point where he shouldn't be playing. No, he's still their best quarterback.
We're going to move on from a vet to a soon-to-be rookie.
That?
Joe Burrow won the Heisman Trophy and a national championship while leading LSU to a perfect 15-0 season last year. So the thought of being drafted number one overall to a Bengals team that has just 15 wins over their last three seasons isn't exactly thrilling for the 23-year-old QB. With Burrow saying, quote, I do have leverage. They have their process and I have my process. We haven't even gotten to the combine yet. There's a lot of things that have to happen leading up to the draft and a lot of information gathered. So, Canty, it's starting to look like Joe Burrow might snub the Bengals if they draft them. What do you think?
I think this is a little bit curious in terms of Joe Burrow verbalizing that he has leverage at this stage in the pre-draft process. Mm-hmm. Like, we haven't gotten to the combine. That's next week. He hadn't hosted his own pro day. That's a ways down the line. He hadn't had a conversation with the Cincinnati Bengals organization, their head coach, Zach Taylor, to see how they view him. So I think any type of positioning in terms of exercising leverage because you don't want to be in Cincinnati with the number one overall pick is premature on his part. Now, I understand where it's coming from. He's being trained by Jordan Palmer, Carson Palmer's brother, and Carson came out and said some things recently critical about the organization, saying they're not willing to do what it takes, exhaust every resource in order to make the team a Super Bowl contender. I know a lot of people in NFL circles feel the same way about that organization, so I do get the trepidation on Burrow's part in terms of going to Cincinnati, because when you are drafted number one overall and you did win a Heisman in college, especially coming off of the season that Joe had, there are going to be lofty expectations. You want to be with an organization that's going to help you realize your full potential so you can meet and exceed those expectations. Cincinnati hasn't been that place for a lot of high draft picks, so I get it. But at this stage in the process, I just think it's far too early for Joe Burrow to make that type of determination. He's not making an informed decision if indeed he is trying to position himself not to be selected by the Bengals.
And here's, to me, the biggest thing, Chris, is everybody's saying, well, you pull an Eli Manning. When Eli Manning pulled an Eli Manning, Eli Manning didn't say a word. There's no quote from Eli Manning saying, I don't know, but I got leverage over the San Diego Chargers. Eli Manning was brilliant in that he said nothing, right? Even when they fired the whole staff for benching him, he never said a word. That's not how he did it. In public, you have one public face. And hey, whoever drafts me, if it's Cincinnati Bengals, I get to be the number one pick and play in Ohio, great. Behind the scenes, let your agent handle that. You got to be smarter. And to the idea that he has leverage, no, he doesn't. They have the number one pick, and if he doesn't want to play for them, they are going going to let him sit and let him rot. That's what the Bengals have done. That's what the Bengals will do. You think they're going to pass on the number one quarterback prospect when they need a quarterback who's from the state of Ohio, who just right. won a national championship, who had maybe the best year in the history of the sport at the position? They're not passing on him because Carson Palmer a decade ago had a bad run and decided he wanted to retire. They don't care. It's not how the Bengals are wired, and I think it's a mistake to make any negative feelings public at this point or at any point in time.
Yeah, I'm with you. Look, I think that he seems to be sending signals that he doesn't want to play for the Bengals. If they go ahead and draft him, I think he'll put on a happy face and play for him. He is the type of kid, you saw it at LSU, he's got some cockiness that I like. He seems like a leader. I'm sure he believes wherever he goes, he can be successful. To your point, Carson Palmer, Jordan Palmer, it seems obvious he's hearing negative things from them because we've heard negative things from Carson. Here's what I'd say, though. And I'm not saying the Bengals are this great organization. Okay? The reputation is well-deserved. But are they just this absolute worst organization in football? They've had more success.
They're in the conversation.
They've had more success than the Cleveland Browns. Let me finish. They've had more success than the Cleveland Browns. They've had more success than the Detroit Lions. They've been to Super Bowls. I know it was 3 and 4 decades ago. They've been to 2 Super Bowls. And Carson Palmer, does he take any of the blame? He was there 7 years. They made it to 2 playoffs. As soon as they replaced Carson Palmer with Andy Dalton, same coach, they went to 5 straight playoffs. Well, I know they didn't win a game.
He tore up in one playoff.
Fine. Game. He came back. Yeah. And my point is he made it 2 out of 7 years. Andy Dalton goes on a 5 playoff game, you know, year run. Mm-hmm. So I'm just saying, like, they've had some of the better players in the league there before. Even now you got a Joe Mixon. You got a A.J. Green. I'm not saying they don't have their issues
right.
and that they're as in as some other teams are, but to act like they're just this no man's land in the NFL, I just don't think it matches up historically.
Well, CB, it's a team that's bereft of talent right now, and it's an organization that has shown reluctance to dive into free agency. They usually try to build through the draft, and then they keep their own guys around. The problem is they haven't been hitting on a lot of those draft picks that they have had over the last 4 or 5 seasons, so it is a tough situation for Joe Burrow to go in because you don't have a ton to work with. And you're talking about A.J. Green. We'll see what happens with A.J. Green. He might be gone. So I look at this, and if you're Joe Burrow, I get the concern, but you still have to sit down and talk to the organization before you can come out publicly and say, well, I've got leverage in this situation. I think he's doing himself a disservice. At this point, anything other than saying that you want to be the number one overall pick is a misstep, in my opinion.
I completely agree. We're all kind of, I think, lockstep in the what is the win, right? What's the win in him saying anything negative? Right
I think
now?
He just hope if he doesn't want to go there, the win in his mind is I can deter them from taking me, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think if we look back when they were the Bungles before they became the Bengals, right? They had all these off the field issues, but that was kind of how they were built. They took guys right. like a Michael Johnson, right, who was really a first round talent, took him in the 3rd round. They would take guys that were risks, and Marvin Lewis found a way to make it all work, right? He was the adult in the room. Mm-hmm. I talked to TJ Houshmandzadeh, of course, worked with us at Fox, and he was like, man, my first year there, before Marvin was there, like, we had all kinds of craziness during training camp, right? Mm-hmm. That were just things that didn't go on anywhere else. And I don't think those days have returned with Zach Taylor, but he's not a guy that comes in and commands a room and has the respect of everybody where you can take some guys that are risky and he'll get them to fall in line. So it's a little bit of who they are. I think here's one thing I would love Carson to do, and I've known Carson for 30 years, grew up in the same area, have same friends, and he needs to come out and explain to people why he did what he did, because he, at the time, took the biggest contract in the history of the NFL and then tore up his knee. And again, this is me relaying what I have been told by people close to him and by Carson a little bit, is like, look, before he retired, he said, look, I want to come back and I want to make this work, but here's like 10 things we need to do. And there was little things like, you know, they didn't have new towels. Mm-hmm. They didn't stay in a hotel the night before a game. So guys could go out and do whatever. And do you need to? Maybe not, but everybody else in the NFL was doing it. You know, from the facilities and the resources and all the other stuff that says to players that really care, hey, we care too. We're willing to waste a little bit of money just to show you how much we care. And when that didn't happen, he was like, look, I can't help you. I'd rather not play than play for an organization that doesn't understand what it takes to win. I do think some of those things have changed. They still have a small scouting department. They still make bizarre decisions. They still don't buy into free agency. Some of that is actually good because most people miss 66% of the time you miss in free agency anyway. But it's the message you're sending to players about your investment in winning and winning now, which resonates around the league and is clearly missing in Cincinnati.
Time now to play In or Out. 41-year-old Drew Brees has decided to return for his 20th season, posting to Instagram that he wants to make another run at it with the Saints. Doug, are you in or out on Brees needing another Super Bowl win to cement his legacy as one of the greats?
I'm in that he needs to win another Super Bowl. I think when you ask people that are fans, or you ask people that are experts, you know, like a Chris who played, they'd say, like, look, he's had a great career. Okay? He's been a great, we kind of throw around great, but he's not in that upper echelon. He doesn't crack that tier of, I don't know, it's the je ne sais quoi, I don't know what it is. But if you win two Super Bowls, now all of a sudden there's not a lot people can say about you, right? Yes, I think he needs to win one more to cement that legacy as one of the best of the best of the best, because I do think it's kind of missing.
I don't think he needs to, so I'm out. I get it. You want to be in the room with Tom Brady, Joe Montana, John Elway. But to me, when Drew Brees walks away, he would have cemented himself as one of the all-time greats, just because when you look at his ranks in every major statistical category to evaluate a passer, he's going to be number one, or he's going to be right there at the top. So for me, the longevity and the productivity says that he was one of the greatest quarterbacks to ever play the game, not just one of the greatest quarterbacks in this era.
I'm out because I don't think, as great as it would be to see him win another Super Bowl, and it would help his legacy a little bit, I don't think it changes his stature. He's already a Hall of Famer. He's already an all-time great, like an elite of the elite. But he's not on that Brady, Peyton, Manning, even though Manning only had two Super Bowls.
Right.
Montana, you know, that level. And I don't think winning another Super Bowl gets him to that level, as great as it would be. Even with all the numbers, and you look at the guys I mentioned and a few others, every year they were healthy. Once they really got rolling, their teams were really good in the playoffs, winning double digits every year. Brees had a lot of 7-9 seasons. I know a lot of that was the defense and stuff, but I think that's part of why he's not viewed as the Bradys and Montanas and guys like that are, even Peyton Manning, even though he has all those records.
Elway, too. Roethlisberger, too. Eli, too. Right? Like,
he's ahead of Eli.
I think he is as well. But the only argument you can use is, well, he's only got one. And if we remember that game, the onside kick really kind of changed the game. It was more of a defensive-oriented game than offense.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You're right in that if he got two, it would be hard to argue. But I just think in our general feelings, would you still feel like Drew Brees is up there with those guys?
No.
I mentioned, okay, that's what I'm saying.
No, but I do
but
think
the argument
I do think
tough.
It changes
right.
The argument.
Right.
All right, well, with Brees back in New Orleans, it looks like backup Teddy Bridgewater will be the odd man out. So, Doug, are you in or out on Bridgewater leading a team other than the Saints to the playoffs next season?
To the playoffs? I don't think Teddy Bridgewater is a quarterback that leads you to playoffs. I think he's solid. I think he's a great guy. I think people like him. I feel like Carolina is the best fit for him. The play caller from LSU, who used to be
Joe
in New
Brady,
Orleans,
yep.
Yeah, Joe Brady goes and he's their offensive coordinator. Like, you got to go where you know the system, where they know the quarterback. I think that's a fit, and I don't feel like Carolina's a playoff team. And I don't think as a free agent, he's going to the teams that are playoff teams that need a quarterback, maybe outside of the Chargers, I don't think look at him that way. So I'm out on him leading a team to the playoffs. I'm in on him being a solid starting quarterback.
I'm in on him. I think that, you know, look, if he went to Indianapolis with Frank Reich, I think, you know, they got the running game. They got receivers, the defense. I think he could lead them to the playoffs, offensive line. Tampa Bay, you know, cut out those mistakes that Jameis makes. And now, if I'm them, I would stick with Jameis. Mm. But if they went with Bridgewater, I think they might have a chance. Obviously, the NFC's tough, but they might have a chance. But I think if he goes to Indy, if he somehow ended up in New England, if Brady's not there, I think they have a chance to make the playoffs too.
I'm out on this just because we don't know where he's going to end up being. And I don't think Teddy Bridgewater is a force multiplier. Now, he can show me different, but I don't see it right now. I do think he's good enough that if you have the right supporting cast, he can get your team in the playoffs. But right now, it's impossible to tell where he's going to go. This 2020 quarterback carousel in the offseason remains to be seen what the possible landing spots for him are. But I do think Teddy Bridgewater is a solid quarterback. But leading a team to the playoffs, no matter what team he's on, I'm out on that.
Yeah, speaking of quarterback carousels, on to Cam Newton. Monday, we reported that the Panthers believe Cam will pass his physical in March. And now reports are Carolina leaked that because they're poised to trade the quarterback. Doug, are you in or out on Cam being the Panthers' starting quarterback next season?
Out. Out. New regime. All his, he's the last of the Mohicans, really, that's left. I mentioned you bring in Joe Brady, which that Saint style is more about accuracy. That's not Cam Newton. He struggles to stay healthy. He's not the same runner he was in the past. I'm out. Do I think he gets another opportunity? Sure. It's only $19 million, right? But right. For a starting quarterback, a former MVP, I also think we massively overrate Cam Newton. He had one great year. One. The rest, 60% or so passing or lower. 20, 22 touchdowns, 14 interceptions, and that's when he was healthy. Now you get in the 30s, not healthy. I'm out. I think Carolina knows they've seen his best days, and they're going to sell him at a bargain basement price.
I'm out. The Carolina Panthers are not a contender this year. It's a team that's in transition. Ron Rivera's gone. Greg Olsen gone. Luke Kuechly gone. Seems like the new owner is intent on stripping this thing down to the studs, and I don't think Cam Newton is a part of that, especially when you realize that Cam Newton could probably fetch you some significant draft capital just because his cap number for 2020 is a very manageable $19 million. So I do think there will be some trade value for him. The Carolina Panthers will flip him if he's healthy for a draft pick, and that will add to their future plans and the ammunition that their general manager will have going into the 2021 offseason.
I'm with you guys in that I don't think he'll be there, but I'm going to say in because I don't think it'd be the worst idea in the world to keep him because, as you said, $19 million is all he's making. He's got 1 year left on his deal. Give it a try. See if he's healthy. Matt Rule's got plenty of security. 7-year deal. So it doesn't have to all be in this 1 year you turn it around. If you don't have a great alternative, you don't have your young guy that you think is your quarterback of the future, why not go with Cam one
Well,
year?
Their quarterback of the future is down I-85 correct. In Clemson, South
correct.
Carolina.
Correct. Or at Ohio State.
So basically,
yeah. Lose for Lawrence.
Yes.
Can we start banging the drum for
lose
that now?
For Lawrence.
Lose for Lawrence.
Well, then if we're listening to you, maybe they keep Cam.
Tank for Trevor.
Would you lose with Cam?
But see, that's the
Lawrence.
But here's the thing: why put Cam out there and devalue something that could be an asset that you could help get you more picks with?
Valid point. Onto some hoops. The small ball Rockets come out of the All-Star break right in the middle of the Western Conference. But with James Harden leading the league with over 35 points a game and Russell Westbrook looking as explosive as ever, the Houston duo doesn't lack any confidence. When the two were asked in a GQ article, what pieces, if any, are y'all missing before you can win a championship? Yes, I said y'all. Harden replied, we've got everything. And Westbrook chimed in, yeah, we're good. So, Chris, are they right that the small ball Rockets are title contenders?
Well, first of all, I think the interesting question is, because you know how magazine pieces work, were they interviewed for this before the trades were made, before they went small ball? I don't know. I'm guessing it was after, but it may have very well been before because it takes, you know, months sometimes to get articles like this out. However, to answer your question, I don't think so. I think at best they're the third best team in the West. So barring major injuries to the Clippers and the Lakers, I don't think they can get to the conference finals. I think they were better suited to win the championship a couple years ago when they still had Clint Capella and had Chris Paul. And we all know they had Golden State down 3-2. I still feel like Golden State would have won that series if Chris Paul, you know, was out. If he had stayed healthy, I think Golden State would have won. But I don't know that. I mean, maybe the Rockets would have won that series and gone on to win the championship. But when you went ahead and made the trade to Chris Paul for Russell Westbrook, I think this move to small ball was the best thing for your lineup now. Like, this is great for Russell Westbrook because for the first time in his career, the lane is wide open. Even though OKC, you had Steven Adams there, now it's wide open. He doesn't have to sit at the three-point line anymore and wait for Harden to pass him the ball where he was shooting like 23% from three. So if you notice his play, he's averaged darn near 40 points a game since they went to small ball when he's been healthy. And I also think, Doug, one of the best things about this is that it makes them less Harden-centric. Before it was Harden clearly number one and Russ kind of getting in where he fit in like everybody else. Now I think it's really a 1-2 punch. These are two co-stars now, and Harden obviously can do his thing, and Westbrook's able to do what he does best. So both of them can kind of maximize their games in this system. And I think they got slightly better than they were a month ago, but I don't think they can win.
And they added, of course, two players here in the buyout market, right? I mean, I think, you know, Damari Carroll.
Which I think are good moves for this style of play.
Yes, gives them more shooting off the bench, more guys to versatile defenders. Okay, let's start 2 years ago. Okay, 2 years ago was the 27 in a row missed threes. 26 or 27 in a row missed threes. Obviously, you make any of those, but live by it, die by it. It should also be pointed out, and hasn't, I don't think, enough, Andre Iguodala was hurt for the Warriors.
Right.
If Andre Iguodala, everybody's like, well, maybe Chris Paul didn't get hurt.
Exactly.
Well, Andre Iguodala didn't get hurt. I never thought they used Chris Paul enough the way that Chris Paul is great. Chris Paul is arguably the best pick and roll point guard in the last 15 years. You know, he and John Stockton, they're unbelievable at screen roll. And when you combine the three-point shooting they had around him, so many times Chris Paul was just standing waiting for the basketball, and that's not getting the best value out of that asset. But I agree with the trade of Capella. Even though you want rim protection, Capella has no real value because you can't. Russell Westbrook's not a screen roll guy,
right?
And they're getting the most out of what they have, and so I think it was a smart move to completely commit to small ball. So first things first, which is the name of the show, but also this needs to be stated. Whomever in the Houston Rockets organization, I want you to watch, whoever convinced Russell Westbrook to stop shooting threes, I commend you. I owe you a steak dinner. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you. He can't shoot him, and for the most part, he hasn't shot him. And guess what? His production is better.
Yep.
And they put shooters around him. And while I agree with you, and oh yeah, by the way, the byproduct of it is less James Harden dribble. I love basketball. I think James Harden's great. I hate watching James Harden play basketball most of the time because he dribbles so much. Like, I get it. But I actually like what they're doing. I like that they're committed to the style, and they're the third best team in the West, which we agree with. But they could screw up the Lakers. They could screw up the Clippers, and here's why. You mentioned the Clippers and the struggles that they're having at times because they don't know who's in their lineup. The Clippers are kind of struggling a little bit with an identity crisis because they haven't played together enough.
Right.
The Rockets are not. They knew who they are. Right? Russell Westbrook's finally figured out, hey, I'm not a three-point shooter.
And the style of play.
They know exactly what they are, right? They are Russell Westbrook trying to get to the rim, and if somebody comes, they're going to kick off and shoot a three.
Right.
They're James Harden going one-on-one. If somebody helps, there's a kickoff, and they're going to shoot a three. They know exactly who they are. And knowing who you are is kind of the beginning of your true success in life. It's the same thing with teams. I do think they have a shot to win this thing. It's an outside shot, but it's the best shot they have with their personnel. And I don't think the Lakers or the Clippers particularly want to play them because they're going to win a game or two simply based upon this style that they're completely committed to.
Yeah, I wouldn't pick them over either the LA teams. But before the trade, I thought they had a better shot at beating the Clippers. After the trade, or now that they're going small, I think they have a better shot. Again, I wouldn't pick them. But yeah, they got a better shot at beating the Lakers because the Lakers would have trouble. I mean, they spread out the floor and go small. Now are the Lakers bigs going to get out there and guard them?
Not just that. Who does LeBron James guard? Like, we talk about, I mean, obviously JaVale McGee is useless in that series. Dwight Howard is useless in that series.
Yeah. Right? AD may have a little trouble, but he can get out there and guard.
No, but Anthony Davis probably has to guard Russell Westbrook, right? That's what people have been doing.
They did that because I believe they played him.
Right, and they lost.
Right,
it's like, and then how do you hide LeBron James, who at this point in his career is more of really a help side guy than he is. Like, he can't guard James Harden. He can't guard Russell Westbrook.
He'd probably put him on PJ.
Right. So, Tucker. Okay, so he's going to guard PJ Tucker and be out of the lane, and he's not able to help, which he's a great, brilliant help side defender now at using his brain at this point in his career. It's a really hard matchup for the Lakers that are not built for that style. It's something they struggle with. So I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays out.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern.